The following is Dan Perkins' appearance on Ken Lovejoy's Charlotte County Speaks radio show in Southwest Florida.
Ma'am, do you know why I pulled you over?
I was doing 110 and a 35.
Worse.
I'm drunk.
Worse.
This car is stolen.
Do you know what day it is?
What day is it? The day after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. And what are you wearing?
White.
Please step outside the car. Wait, your Crocs are white too?
Oh dear.
Dispatch, I'm gonna need backup.
I just lost track of the time.
Save it for the judge, ma'am.
This fall, remember, friends don't let friends wear white after Labor Day. Paid for by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Tacky.
Do you know what day it is?
It's Tuesday here. What day is it there?
Day after Labor Day.
You know what that means?
Please, tell me.
It's Telephone Tuesday.
Huh. Didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Oh my God, who do we have to thank for this?
Alexander Graham Bell, inventor of the telephone.
Who are you gonna call?
Who you gonna call?
Happy Telephone Tuesday.
It's showtime.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is Charlotte County Speaks, your chance to let your voice be heard on local, state, and national issues. And now, broadcasting live from a dumpy little warehouse behind a Taco Bell, the host of Charlotte County Speaks, Ken Lovejoy.
Thank you, Johnny. News Radio 1580, 100.9 FM, WCCFradio.com, and on your iHeartRadio app. Charlotte County Speaks, hour number two on the air. Phone lines 941-206-1580, toll free 888-441-1580. Email address ccspeaks@live.com. Dan, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
It's Dan Perkins, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, no, what's going on? The last couple of weeks, every time I try to call you through Teams, it just goes straight to your voicemail. Doesn't really.
Yeah, I've been sitting here with the phone on, waiting for your call, and it never came through. So yeah. I don't know what's going on.
I don't either. So anyway,
we got it.
How you doing? How was the weekend?
Very good. Very good. I did a lot of research over the weekend and a lot of things to talk about today.
Go for it.
I want to talk about the misinformation that the left has put out at the shootings in Minneapolis. They can't seem to get it right. This was not a school shooting. This was a Roman Catholic functioning church that is adjacent to the school, and it's a parish church. There were people in the congregation celebrating Mass. Two of the wounded people were 80-year-olds. Who were there for church services. So, first of all, it's not a school shooting. It's a church shooting. Why is that important? Because most people, and I'm going to make a bold statement and say the vast majority of people in the United States do not know that there were 430 church shootings and attacks last year. That's more than one a day, and nobody's talking about it. And using guns to attack churches is up between 2025 and 2024, 84%. We've got a lot of things nobody's talking about the fact that Catholic churches, Protestant churches, Jewish synagogues, Muslim mosques are all under attack in the United States.
Muslim mosques?
And even mosques are under attack in the United States.
Huh.
Yes.
Go figure.
Yeah, I know. Go figure. From what I can gather, and I've been looking at it every day, the shooter hated everybody, including himself.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about these people, that the new shooters who are not aligned with any particular group, whether it's Hamas or Hezbollah or whatever it is, or Black Lives Matter, they're independent. They hate everybody, and they hate themselves. She said, and this is another thing, she said, well, that's what a reporter for MSNBC corrected a congressman that he was talking about the shooting in his district. And she corrected him because he used the word he, because that's what he was.
Yeah, he's a dude. Yeah.
After he finished, she said to him, no, it's a woman. No,
no,
it's not a woman.
It was not a woman.
And because you're MSNBC and you say she is because she was transgendering, and in her manifesto, they didn't mention this. She outright outright said that she regretted
he
transgender.
Yeah, he regretted brainwashing himself.
And so a lot of things that are important that people need to understand, and I'm going to be critical, Fox News included.
Yep.
Did not include any of the things that I just spoke to you about.
And something else, I don't know if you heard this or not, but this dude's father has worked for the CIA, DOD for the last 29 years. The mother is mentioned in almost every story. The father is not mentioned at all. And I think that's by design, too, based on where he worked.
Yeah. And again, we have a situation where the mainstream media, in this particular case, CBS and their Sunday night show, 60 Minutes, basically edited an interview with the director of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. edited stuff out to change what she was saying when she was being interviewed, and she called him on the carpet on it. And their simple response was, edits were done in order to meet the time constraints that were necessary to.
That's a load. That's a load of crap. It's a lie.
Yeah, a load. Yeah. And so we have. I'm staying in the same. Pardon the pun, but I'm staying in the same church. I'm just going from pew to pew here. Numbers are fascinating, and they can be manipulated. Do whatever you want them to say. People were saying that Chicago is not as dangerous as Memphis. They cite the statistics that says that there are more, quote, murders per thousand in Memphis than there are in Chicago. What they're not telling you is that Memphis is anywhere near as big as the city of Chicago in population. When you look at the actual number of people murdered in Chicago versus the number of people that are murdered in Minneapolis or in Memphis, the numbers are startling. 531 in Chicago, 320 in Memphis. Neither one is acceptable. But again, trying to change the narrative. And then we have the mayor, who currently has a 6%, let me say that again, 6% approval rating, is saying, no, he doesn't want Donald Trump to bring the National Guard in. He'd rather have the money to build low-income housing. That'll solve the problem.
What, so the murders can be isolated to the low-income housing area?
Well, but see, this shows the ignorance of the reporters. Somebody should have followed up the mayor's statement. I want to ask you these questions. Have you located the land, and how much land are you going to need to build enough low-income housing to solve the murder problem?
Yeah.
No. Do you know how much it's going to cost? No. How long is it going to take to build? I don't know. So people are going to continue to die. Most, again, this is another statistic you didn't hear. And I'm not going to ask you this. You probably already know it, but I don't mean to embarrass you. I'm just asking you almost rhetorically. How many years in a row has Chicago had more murders than any other city in the country?
Oh, I would say it's been recurring for a number of years.
13 years in a row.
Yeah.
Was the city with the most murders each year in the last 13 years. We had Labor Day weekend shooting. I think there was 35 people shot and 5 or 7 people were killed. And they don't need more police. They'd rather have low income housing. And the idea that this is the way we're going to solve the problem, we're going to put in low income housing. Well, again, it just shows how inept this mayor is, and that's why he's got a 6%. And the people were protesting over the weekend, begging Donald Trump to send in the troops.
Yeah,
to save their children, save the city.
Gateway Pundit's got a article from a Chicago alderman who is slamming Pritzker and the mayor for refusing to work with Trump, asking the questions: how many victims are we comfortable with?
What's an acceptable kill rate?
Yeah,
that's the real question. That's how has been. Mr. Mayor, what is the acceptable kill rate of people in Chicago? How many children are you willing to sacrifice?
Yeah. I mean, what was it over the Labor Day weekend? I'm reading 52 shootings over in Chicago over just this last Labor Day weekend. 52.
Right. I think there were 6 or 7 people killed.
Yeah.
There were 50 some shootings. So here's another statistic that nobody's, and I had to I had to do a lot of research to come up with this, but I want you to understand that this information is that I'm about to give you in an abbreviated version is basically from the FBI. In 2024, the total number of homicides led by 573 was Chicago. Memphis, which they talk about being a dangerous city, more dangerous than Chicago, had 235 in 24. There are two charts. One is the total homicides, and then the total homicides per capita, meaning per 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Every city but one on both lists have Democratic mayors.
Oh, yeah.
And the one city that didn't have a Republican or a Democrat. They had an independent or no party declared. The Democrats have been in charge of all of these cities, and these are the most dangerous cities in the United States based on FBI statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other point I need to make. The people who, if somebody walked onto the school grounds at midnight and fired a gun, some people who count statistics would say that's a school shooting. Not true. The FBI does not count it as a school shooting. And so that there are people who are manipulating the numbers as opposed to staying to what I think is important. Now, Washington, D.C. made both lists. 187 people were killed last year in Washington, D.C. The rate per 100,000 is 27.5. However, Washington, D.C. has the highest auto theft, highest in the nation.
Well, you got all those rich congressmen and senators who got rich off of our backs and insider trading, and they're driving some nice rides. It doesn't surprise me that that's the carjacking capital.
And this is the thing that a lot of people when they hear it are absolutely outraged. The average age of the people doing the hijacking are between 12 and 17 years of age.
Yeah, that's who the that's who the gangs use because, you know, they're generally going to get let off pretty easily.
Well, one thing that distinguishes Washington, D.C. from the rest of the country is that you're a minor until you're 25.
Are you kidding me?
No. So if you commit a crime, a felony, murder, whatever, and you're under 25, you might get house arrest. You might get an ankle bracelet, probably sometime in a juvenile detention center. But you're not tried as an adult. You're tried as a minor at 25 years of age. Only place in the entire country that has that.
Well, at least Bowser came out and actually said that what Trump is doing is working. All the other Democrat mayors refuse to acknowledge the crime rate, refuse to acknowledge the problem, and instead slam Trump for wanting to do something about it.
Right, and he's taken away our constitutional rights by bringing the National Guard. And there was a judge, a district judge, who said that the use of the National Guard in the Los Angeles riots was unconstitutional.
No, it wasn't.
No, she said it was.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I don't care what the judges say. I'm done with the judicial system. The judicial system in America is a complete shambles. These judges need to fall and go boom. You know, but nobody does anything about the judges. DOJ, little Blondie, just keeps letting them do what they do. No repercussions on them at all. And they keep destroying the judicial system from the inside of the judicial system, and nobody's doing crap about it. They're going to regret the lawlessness that they're creating because it will one day very soon affect them personally.
I look at it, and I agree with you. I think that there has to be a better way to appoint judges because what's going on, whether it's a Democrat or Republican in the White House, they can appoint over their term, if it's 4 years or 8 years, whatever it is, they can theoretically appoint hundreds of judges. I mean, Donald Trump, when he had his first, I said during the campaign for Donald Trump 45, I said the most important issue about this presidential election is that the President of the United States could possibly select two, maybe three justices of the Supreme Court, which will change the court to more conservative. If the Supreme Court is conservative, they'll change a lot of things, and obviously they have changed a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that we're looking at every time, it's political. And I've watched many of these judicial hearings where people are being interviewed, and I love Senator Kennedy from Louisiana when he gets a chance to ask questions, and the people really are quite nervous because their past is coming back to haunt them. But the point is that there's got to be something better, because idea that we have not only judicial appointments by the president, and these are lifetime appointments, they're skewing the court. And we had, in fact, the problem that was caused was we had judge shopping by the Democratic Party, and most of the suits that were filed against Trump came from six states. And so I agree with you that the judicial system is screwed up, but I think it's the politicians that have screwed it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been thinking about that, and I haven't come up with a solution yet. But
I can think of a couple that I just can't mention on air.
Oh, okay. It's a family show, huh? So I thought about a lot of things over the weekend, and I look at what's going on. I look at how wrong the news media was on the shootings in Minneapolis, and the people that were being interviewed, how they didn't get the facts straight. And the people who were doing the commentaries from the news networks weren't being honest with the American people, didn't give them all the facts. And so I concluded that either they're ignorant or lazy, because mm-hmm. I grant you it took me some time to find all these statistics. I did find them, and I was able to verify them. I had a meeting yesterday with my regular group, and they said, Dan, how do you, as a reporter and a commentator, how do you deal with information to verify it? And I said, the first thing I do, it's my own personal smell test. If it smells terrible, then there's probably something wrong. I've got to figure out where to go. I usually start with Google. And the reason why they wanted to know what my process was, because they don't have a process and they're looking for somebody to help them so they can figure out what to do. So I start with Google, and I ask the question. And I know that I'm going to get – I know at Google I have a reasonable chance of getting both sides of the story, so that I can then look at each side and what people are saying, and then I can drill down further to see what's going on. But what I'm really saying to our listeners, you can't trust anybody anymore.
No.
You're going to have to do your own homework. You're going to have to do your own homework.
Trust no one. And the information's there. You can find it, and it doesn't take that uh-huh. long. I mean, once you sense the stench of what you were reading, it didn't take you probably uh-huh. more than an hour and a half to find everything you needed to know to confirm that what you read was a bunch of BS.
Right. And I decided that I am now gaining more trust in the FBI than I had under Biden and Obama. And so I don't want to play games. I don't want to have people who say, well, somebody shot a gun off in the parking lot. That's a school shooting. No, I'm looking for places where bad people came to a school and started killing people. And I want to find out how many and where. And the FBI is a great source of crime statistics. And I'm building confidence in them that we're getting an accurate story. So I would much rather go to the FBI than to Fox News or MSNBC or whatever, CNN, because I just don't trust them to be able to tell the truth. Disheartening, because you look at things, and I asked the group this question, and I've asked it several times, and you and I talked about it, I think, the last time we were on the air together. And I said, you know, I wonder how many people think that the reason why the Democrats are against anything that Trump does is they just plain hate Trump.
It's more than that.
And cannot admit cannot admit that some of the things, what he did at the border was a good thing. And what they're doing, what he did on inflation and the tariffs and everything else, they just cannot bring themselves, because of their hatred of the person is so strong,
mm-hmm.
that they are unwilling to give him any credit for anything that he's done.
They've become as psychotic as the transgenders. They're as mentally ill as the transgenders, and they will switch that hatred from Trump to Rubio or Vance or whoever the next GOP candidate for president is. That's how psycho they are. It's going to.
You're raising a great point, because I've asked the question: is this Trump that they hate, or is it Republicans that they hate? And right now, Trump is in charge,
yes.
and is being effective.
Yeah, that's it.
Why they hate him.
Because you
but
can
he's
go
the
back.
Republican first.
Yeah, you can go back to 06, the 06 election, when W was up for re-election. And that's when the left decided they couldn't support the war anymore. They had, we can't be Americans anymore. We got to try and win this election. So we have to make Bush be the bad guy. So they started crapping all over him, and the psychosis uh-huh. just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they are. They're right. mental. These people are mentally ill. I don't care what anybody says. These people are as mentally ill as the transgenders themselves, and they keep getting more mentally ill by the day. And it's going to result in some big-time Blue City violence coming up here shortly if it isn't curbed.
One quick question, and then I know I'm running late, and I apologize. I just had too many things on my mind.
That's all right.
I wanted to ask you this question. And the question is fairly straightforward. The idea is to try and find out what is in your heart, asking yourself
love.
If I'm not talking to you specifically,
okay.
I'm talking to your audience. But if you hate Donald Trump for what he's done for the country, where are the Democrats? Where are the Democrats? We have Bernie Sanders over the weekend saying Kennedy needs to resign because of his stance on vaccines.
No, that's because he's over the target. He's over the target, and he's going to be exposing a lot of stuff here real soon that Schumer and Bernie and a lot of Democrats aren't going to like, because it's the truth. So whenever you see Bernie or something like, oh, RFK's got to resign, he's destroying the country, he's right over the target, and that means he's doing a very good job for we the people.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that that's so important, because we in many respects, we've lost our way. For example, real quick. Polking is one of the polling services that I've used for a long time. And they have a question that came out this morning, and the question was pretty straightforward. Do you think that the Ukrainian war will be settled before the end of the year? 53% said no.
Yeah, for us, I think it will be, because I think Trump's going to just pull back and say, look, you're not getting any more money. You're not getting any more arms. You guys won't come to the table. Screw you both. You're on your own. So I think for us, by the end of the year, it will be. But for them, and I really don't care at this point for them, they want to continue this.
Right.
Starmer, Germany, France. Macron is supposedly ramping up all his hospitals to prepare for some catastrophic event. So they want to keep the war going for whatever dumbass reason. They have no ability to keep the war going themselves without
right.
us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Trump's going to bail on them all before the end of the year. And quite frankly, the way that Europe has acted, I think we need to pull out of NATO. Quite frankly, I don't think we need to be involved with NATO anymore. NATO, the EU has become the new Soviet Union. They're becoming a bigger problem for us than Russia will ever be. And we need to separate ourselves from that BS.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
All right.
Sorry about going over.
No, that's fine. It's Dan Perkins, folks. Check him out on his website, danperkinsmedia.org, danperkinsmedia.org. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
I know a lot of you are already on my side. And for you naysayers, I have two strong words for you. Come on. Come on.
Okay, sure.
Right. We'll be right back with Charlotte County Speaks on News Radio 1580 WCCF.
Inflation year over year. Whenever anybody asks me, oh, you know, well, government said there's really not a lot of inflation out there. It's muted. And this pundit said this. I said, I tell you what, show me your bills. Show me what you're paying. You show me your prices of the things that you buy are not going up. Year over year, eggs are up 27.3%. Coffee is up 12.7%. Beef is up 12.4%. Uncooked ground beef up 10.3%. Candy and chewing gum up 8.1%. Apples up 7.2%. Fresh chicken up 4.7%. What else? Utilities, electricity. You get the idea here. Straight on down the list. Prices are higher. Watchdog on WallStreet.com.
All right, kids, that's all we have time for today. Back with Ambassiani tomorrow. Have a great day. Stay safe. You might consider ammoing up. You know, head to the gun shop. Peruse the offerings. Bean armory, quite frankly.
Anybody got any more jokes? Anything funny? No? No? All right. See you, folks.
If you are not in the band, please leave. You're closed. If you're not with the venue or the crew, please leave. We are closed. Make your way to the door, please.
We're News Radio 1580 AM WCCF Punta Gorda and FM 100.9 W265 EA Punta Gorda.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
Dan Perkins Media presents a unique and exciting program. Truth Starts Now, a conversation with Dan Perkins. The left has taken away your rights to freedom of speech. Truth Starts Now is a platform for you to regain your voice. America and Americans will be better off if we can have civil and respectful conversations about the day's important issues. Now, here's your host, Dan Perkins.
Welcome to The Truth Starts Now. This is Dan Perkins, and joining us today is an exciting gentleman that I happened to meet interviewing on another show a couple of weeks ago, John Gordon. He's lives in the same state I do, but he lives on the other side of the on the coast in West Palm Beach. So, John, thank you for joining us today. I'm looking forward to having you meet our audience.
Thank you, Dan. You're so nice to invite me on.
Your pleasure. I asked John to just take a moment or two and tell us about himself, what he's doing, and what he wants to accomplish. So you got the floor, sir.
Well, first and foremost, I'm a husband of 48 years in just 7 more days if we make it. And I think we will. And we've got 3 adult sons that we're very proud of. And we just had a new grandson last week, and we're on our way to L.A., to meet him for the first time tomorrow, actually. And we all already have a granddaughter who's 2 years old, so we'll get to spend some time with her as well. I'm an entrepreneur. I've got 2 operating businesses and 4 companies that I manage and run. And of course, politics is something that I've always had an interest in. I've run for public office twice in Georgia, the last time for the Attorney General's office with President Trump's endorsement. And I love this country, and I want to do my part to help retain and keep our republic. I feel like it's everybody's job to pitch in as they may, and I want to do my part.
I just celebrated our 57th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And I've got
to tell me the secret for long.
Just remember these very important words. Yes, dear.
Absolutely. She says, where are we going to dinner, darling? And I'll say, wherever the hell you want to.
Right. So I wanted to have him come and tell you, our audience, what has he observed and what do you think is going on? And was, as we talked about before the show started, was the deep state in America responsible or involved in the two attempts on Donald Trump's life? So what do you say, John?
I think so. My strong suspicions lead me that way, not without cause. We know factually today that the CIA, led by Alan Dulles, was responsible for Kennedy's assassination. And it was a conspiracy of grand proportions. It involved Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the vice president of the United States. He planned it along with Alan Dulles. They both had axes to grind against Kennedy. Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy really despised each other. And Lyndon Johnson and Bobby Kennedy, the attorney general of the United States then, hated each other. And so Kennedy, like Eisenhower, like Truman, who had created the CIA, were very leery of it. And Eisenhower told Kennedy that it had gotten out of control and that it needed to be reined in. And so Kennedy said, well, first of all, he fired Dulles 6 months before he was assassinated. There's some compelling books that I could recommend to your listeners. The Men Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ by Roger Stone, The Unspeakable by Douglas, and The Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot. They really, all three contain a lot of the same information and reach different conclusions, but neither of them are mutually exclusive of the other. So the fact of the matter is, you talk to people and they say, well, I think the mob killed Kennedy. They're right. Well, I think the CIA killed Kennedy. They're right. I think Johnson killed Kennedy. They're right. They all were in on it. The mob basically was responsible in 1959 for Kennedy's primary victory in West Virginia. The Joe Kennedy, who was a bootlegger and knew the mob, got them to help Jack win the primary in West Virginia. Then in the general election, when John Kennedy ran against Richard Nixon, Joe Kennedy got the mob to help him carry Illinois. And there are a lot of people that don't believe that Kennedy really won the 1960 election. I would probably fall into that court, even though I was very young. I was 9 years old when I put on my first bumper sticker for Richard Nixon in 1959. And so I was involved and interested in politics from an extremely young age. And then on November 22nd, 1963, I was home from school with the flu, and I actually saw the first news flash come across that the president had been shot, and sat there and watched the news coming out with my mom for the rest of the afternoon. And then my dad, when he came home from work, he and our entire family sat in front of that black and white television set for the next 4 days, watching everything, including John looking under the flag in the rotunda in search of his dad. It makes me have a lump in my throat to this day, watching him salute the horseless carriage that carried the president's coffin going down Pennsylvania Avenue, and his saluting it, to Jack Ruby shooting and killing Lee Harvey Oswald on national television in cold blood. And so those things gave me somewhat of an obsession about Kennedy's death. And I, as a young guy, I took the Warren Commission's report. I believed in our country. I believed in our government. I accepted the report. I didn't really question it until I got to college. And a guy named Jerry Lafsky from Chicago did a book review on Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane. And it opened my eyes for the first time to the possibility that the Warren Commission was not accurate and that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone. Well, we have subsequently learned that not only did he not act alone, he wasn't even in the sniper's nest, I don't believe. There are witnesses that saw him in the break room drinking a Coca-Cola 10 minutes before the assassination. Then, after the shots were fired, a Dallas police officer went to the school book depository and ran through the building, going up to the sixth floor of the school book depository, and they passed through the break room, and lo and behold, guess who was there? Lee Harvey Oswald, sitting in the same seat, drinking the same Coca-Cola that he had been a few minutes earlier. And there were two ladies that were working on in this little landing next to the stairs that led up to the school book depository. Both of them stated in the immediate aftermath that no one went up the stairs or came down the stairs. And that's the only way that Lee Harvey Oswald could have gotten to the sniper's nest from where he was positioned. So I think it's just a crock. They also, the first thing that happened when they arrested him, he said, "I'm just a patsy." That happened in the theater in South Dallas, which I actually have visited. I visited all the prominent places. I visited where Oswald allegedly killed J.D. Tippit, the Dallas police officer that encountered him. There's a lot to unpack and talk about there. I visited the location of Oswald's rooming house, which has subsequently been demolished. It's no longer there, but I at least went to the address of where it was. And I traced his steps from Dealey Plaza to the theater. And I've been to the theater as well. I've been to the police station, and I visited all these sites. I've talked to the citizen journalists that have been in Dealey Plaza now for decades. And the first words out of Oswald's mouth, "I'm just a patsy," they took him to the police station. They performed a paraffin test. He had no gun residue on his body, not on his hands, not on his cheek, nowhere on his body was he found to have paraffin. And that was within an hour and a half or 2 hours of the assassination, within an hour of his being arrested. And so there's just so much we could talk about it. Ruth Payne got him, Oswald, his job at the school book depository a month before the assassination. Ruth Payne was connected to George de Morenshield, who was a CIA agent and operative who was assigned to watch over Oswald. Ruth Payne got Oswald the job, and then she took Marianne Oswald in to her house and allowed her to live with her for some period of time leading up to the assassination and then afterwards. So George de Morenshield died mysteriously of a gunshot wound to the head. He was staying in in Palm Beach, Florida, just south of town. He went into the guest house. The housekeeper in the house heard the burglar alarm go ding dong or whatever it did. You know the sound I'm talking about. And moments later, the burglar alarm signaled again and followed by.
We got about 2 minutes left before the break. I want to start a question and we can talk about it.
Sure.
Tulsi Gabbard recently released a bunch of reports, confidential, qualified, top secret, whatever you want to say, information. She's representing to the American people that Barack Obama committed treason in trying to overthrow Donald Trump with a coup, along with Brennan, Clapper, and Comey. And some people in the Republican Party say that this is the worst egregious violation of our Constitution and the rights of the American people in the history of our country. What do you think?
I really don't know how you could call it anything other than that. He disseminated information under the color of legitimacy from our nation's government to undermine a duly elected president of the United States, and he almost pulled it off, but they failed, and now they're going to have to deal with the consequences.
So do you think that what Mr. Obama did was in fact treasonous?
I do. You know, you don't have to give information to a foreign government to be guilty of treason. That is certainly one way you can be guilty of treason. But the other way to be guilty of treason is to engage in an attempt to overthrow our government. And, you know, Trump had just gotten elected president. He was waiting to be inaugurated. If that was not an attempt to thwart an election that had just been held, I don't know what it was, and ergo overthrow the presidency.
Yeah. John, we have to think about, how can people follow you?
Oh, you go to johngordon.tv, and we're also on the John Fredericks Radio Network every Saturday from noon to 2, and on cdm.press, and there are 16 digital platforms. We're all over social media, YouTube, Facebook, at Grumble, Getter, the usual suspects.
You mean if you're there. We'll be right back with John after these messages.
Sure.
Okay. So, I want to talk about the comment that you made.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
Welcome back to The Truth Starts Now. We've got John Gordon, and we're going to start a conversation about the strange things that he's noticed about the two assassination attempts on Donald Trump. And Mr. Spellbinder, give me your best shot.
Well, there's an awful lot to talk about. I'm not convinced that Thomas Matthew Crooks was the guy on top of the AGR building. I'm not convinced that it's not him, but I think there's a lot of reason to suspect that it may be someone else. Maxwell Urich drove a white van from Mesa, Arizona to Butler, Pennsylvania, and that van was towed away from the site moments after the attempted assassination. The national media reported that it was the vehicle had munitions inside of it. Now, that vehicle was titled to Urich Munitions, which was is a company in Mesa, Arizona. They are reportedly to have dealt with the CIA and third world countries in supplying arms to some countries. I do not know that factually, but those are rumors that I have read about. But what we do know is that van was in Butler, and we saw it being towed away, and we do know that they said that it was contained explosive. Maxwell Urich is a very interesting figure. He was in the Northwest during the 2019 riots. He was in Seattle, he was in Atlanta, he was in Detroit and Washington. He was known to the CIA because he had fought in the Ukraine and is alleged to have had ties to the CIA, and that he knew Ryan Routh, that would be the West Palm Beach would-be assassin, who also fought in the Ukraine. So there are a lot of intersections between Urich and Routh and the CIA. If you look at pictures of Maxwell Urich from a couple of years ago, you can see that he had gauges in his ears. Subsequently, he removed the gauges and the ears scarred over. If you zoom in on the body on top of the AGR building, it appears to me that the ears of the shooter, the dead shooter, were scarred. Thomas Matthew Crooks never wore pierced ears or had pierced ears, had no scars, but Maxwell Urich did. Urich also had a tattoo on his forearm, and you can look at the picture and conclude that maybe the shooter had a tattoo on his forearm. It's the resolution's not good. It's hard to tell for sure, but you could certainly believe that he had a tattoo on his arm. So that all basically proves nothing. I will give you one more factoid. Maxwell Yurick's parents filed a missing persons report on him on the day after the assassination. He has not been seen or heard of since, to my knowledge. I think Maxwell Yurick is the key to what happened in Butler. Also, Thomas Matthew Crooks, I think, clearly had involvement. I don't know if he was the shooter or if it was Yurick or if it was someone else. What I do know is that the shooter was able to get off 8 rounds of ammunition before the counter sniper took him out. It was a long time to wait, especially given the fact that if you look at the counter sniper in the moments before the shots rang out, it appears that they had Crooks in their sights. The inference, of course, is that they waited until he fired his rounds of ammunition and then took him out. And they really did not fire the first shot. The counter sniper did not fire the first defensive shot. A Butler police officer on the ground saw someone on the roof and saw that he had a rifle. He's the one who fired the first defensive shot and actually shattered the AK-47 and the shooter's shoulder and disabled him. So you kind of have to ask yourself, well, why did the counter sniper then kill him if the shooter was disabled? And he was obviously in no hurry to shoot, that is, the counter sniper. So there are just a gazillion questions. There are also breadcrumbs from Gallery Place in Washington to Crooks's house in the weeks leading up to the assassination. That is, at someone's cell phone traveled from Gallery Place in Washington to Butler, Pennsylvania, where Crooks lived, and those breadcrumbs have been discovered. Now, Gallery Place is where a lot of government offices are, including the DEA, the FBI, and the Secret Service. So, I mean, we can talk more about it if you have questions. I don't want to get on a rant.
Yeah, I understand. I was a marksman in the infantry when I was in the Army, and I could hit targets pretty far away, pretty easily. So I understand that the target of Donald Trump from the position above the building was a fairly easy shot for anybody that had any real experience shooting long rifles. What I don't understand is, if I'm the Secret Service and I've got counter snipers on various rooftops in the area, and I see a commotion on the ground in front of his building, how am I as a sniper, if I see in my scope an image of a person on the roof in the prone position with a long rifle aimed towards the stage, there shouldn't have been any doubt or any wait. You take him out, period. That's what you're trained to do.
Shoot now, ask questions later.
Well, you don't have to ask questions, because what you see in front of you is a threat to the President of the United States.
That's right.
And you got to take that, or potentially a President of the United States, you've got to take that threat away. That's your job. That's why you're a sniper.
I totally agree with everything that you're saying, and I have said the same thing. If we want to know the truth, why mess with Director Cheadle and Ronald Rutrow, who are just bureaucrats through and through, and came before the Congress and just obscuriated, pivoted, dodged. I mean, it was a joke. And so my question was, why have them up there who you know are skilled at lying? That seems to be what they do best. Why not have the sniper under oath and ask him, did someone tell him not to fire? What, and I mean, there's so many questions about it. If you look at the perimeter for Butler, the AGR building, it's a perfect circle. It's a pie, except the AGR building is intentionally omitted from it. You said if you were going to have counter snipers on the roof, why wouldn't you have a counter sniper on probably the most vulnerable spot from the whole theater? Why, where were the counter snipers on that roof? And, you know, there were so many omissions. When do a number of omissions add up to a point where they are commissions? And that's what I am alleging. I fervently believe that it was a conspiracy. I believe that we have not been told the truth. And I just don't know why Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, and even the president for that matter, are not working to unravel Butler, Pennsylvania from July 13th, 2024. I would really like to know what happened and who was behind it.
Right, and I'm not going to argue the point with you. I'm going to suggest maybe it's going on. We just don't know about it.
I hope you're right, and that thought certainly has occurred to me.
Somebody, some person, or you can even say some persons, made the decision that Butler was going to be the place where they were going to take out the president. But my question to you is, who has that power? Who has the power to take out the presidential nominee for the Republican Party for president, who later became president? And it goes back to the same thing with the Kennedy situation. Some one person, somebody. And when we talked a little bit about Obama, it was Obama, but did he make that decision on his own? I'm trying to figure out the mental process here of how people in government positions can make a decision that they're going to have a coup, take Donald Trump out, force him to resign so that he can't run, and they made all these decisions for all these court cases to arrest him, to take him off the ballot. The lawfare of both the Justice Department and the FBI and other agencies, CIA. So who's making that? There's an ultimate accountability to someone. Who is that person?
I don't have the answer to that question. We can speculate. Obama would be a likely choice. So would Hillary or Bill Clinton or both of them. I mean, I think we know who the deep state is now. I think they have been unmasked. It's Obama, Clinton, Clapper, Comey, Brennan. I think we'd have to throw the last head of the CIA while Trump was president 1.0, Mike Pompeo, in with that group. And I think that Bill Barr is part of that group. Mm-hmm. We now know that Bill Barr was counseling and coaching Fani Willis in her persecution of Donald Trump and the Trump 19, as I call them.
Right.
I don't know whether it's one person or a committee of people, or how mechanically it works. We just see it repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like Building 7 from the collapse of the Twin Towers, that just defies explanation other than a controlled demolition. There's so many things that are wrong with this world that we don't have answers to. I think it's time for the American people to stand up and revolt. You don't have to take to the streets. Just write your congressman, write your newspaper and your representatives. If enough people will write, actually, if everybody on this broadcast would write, we would get some action. Because so few people do write that when they get a whole bunch of letters, they really do sit up and take notice. And that's what we need. We need the American people to respond and to say that we demand truth and we demand justice.
John, we've got about a minute left. I want to ask you one more question. There's a chain of command. When I was in the Army, you had a chain of command from the president all the way down to my drill sergeant. Those people that you mentioned who are possible leaders of the Kabul to overthrow Donald Trump, they didn't physically do it per se. They developed the scheme, but they turn it over to other people in CIA, the Justice Department, FBI, to execute. Why do you think that those people who they turned it over to didn't say, no, we're not going to do this? It's not the right thing to do. It's illegal.
I don't know how it works. If I did, I would tell you. My suspicion is that blackmail and payoffs are part of it, but I don't know that. I have had a respected Washington journalist tell me that they felt that the number of members of Congress that were not either compromised or corrupt, you could count on both your hands. And so that's a pretty alarming statement. And I've been saying for a long time, I think this federal government is rotten to its core. I think Donald Trump is systematically and strategically dismantling it a brick at a time. Tulsi Gabbard spilled the beans. She put it all out there on Russia, Russia, Russia. I suspect that the 2020 election is going to be the next chapter of the book. And I hope that Butler, Pennsylvania will be the crowning blow and that the American people will see just how bad it is and they will demand change.
John, it's been a pleasure to be with you. I look forward to having you on in the future. And maybe I can be a guest on your show. I'll tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Well, you can write me, johngordontruth@gmail.com. And then you can watch us on johngordon.tv. And you can also catch us on all the social media that we talked about, the usual places to find people, X, YouTube, Facebook, Rumble, Getter. And then we're on the John Fredericks Radio Network every Saturday, noon to 2, and again on Sunday, noon to 2. So,
and you have a website?
Yeah, johngordon.tv. That's where you can find all of our past episodes.
Okay, super.
Our about page and contact us.
Thanks again for your fascinating conversation, and we'll be in touch.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Take care.